This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz Dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
Today we're talking about what's in your pantry.
That's right. Today's episode was suggested by listener Mish and listener Tom.
We were going to do this episode anyway, and then listener Tom wrote in and sort of sent us some spilled mail that really provided a framework for the whole episode. And if there's one thing we love, it's a framework.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, Matthew, would you explain this framework or maybe read listener Tom's letter?
Okay, I'm going to read listener Tom's letter, and then we're going to go back through it and answer all of Tom's many questions.
Great.
Listener Tom writes, over the years of listening to your fine podcast, I've built up quite the mental image of your guys' kitchens. Matthew, functional Japanese gray kitchen looking out over a wrought iron balcony and a leafy residential street.
That sounds great.
Yeah. Okay. Molly, white electric stove in the middle of a red carpeted dungeon basement.
That doesn't sound quite as nice.
But actually, I have no idea what they look like or what your setup is. What do your kitchens look like? How do you use your counter space? Is the kitchen a separate room or is it a kitchen slash diner? What's always within reach? How many knives are you working with? What are your go-to pots and pans and why? What cooking stuff, condiments, salt, seasonings goes on the counter and what's in the cupboard? Would love to update my frankly unhinged mental model. P.S. I am aware that describe the layout of your home is a top-tier burglar episode suggestion. Cheers from London, England, Tom. I would like to know, like, what, how would this help a burglar?
I know. I feel like windows are a real burglar.
Burglar bait?
Burglar helper. It's like hamburglar.
I always keep
helper.
A box of burglar helper at hand.
Oh my gosh. I was so pleased with myself. So our dog Gilbert, who is now, as of this episode, he's about 10 months old. He is like relentlessly interested in food.
Mm-hmm.
The good thing is, like, it makes him very trainable. He will do anything for the tiniest amount of kibble. Like,
I think this probably makes me very trainable too.
I think so too. Yeah. But also, he will steal your food if you leave it. I mean, if you don't think one step ahead of Gilbert at all times, you're going to lose your food. Anyway, he recently stole. So Ash was craving a hamburger and I brought them home a burger from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And Ash pushed it to the middle of the table while they got up to get something from the kitchen. And Gilbert managed to quickly get up somehow and steal the burger and basically eat the entire patty before Ash could pry it out of his mouth.
And did all of this without having a blueprint
but the best part,
of your kitchen.
That's right. And the best part is that it allowed me to call him the Hamburglar. And I was
thrilled. You have a real live Hamburglar. Did Ash think that was funny at
the
time?
We did both have a little laugh after Ash stopped, like, seething.
Like, even like not being pregnant, I would have been so upset if my burger disappeared into a dog.
No, it's infuriating. Like,
but it's fun. I can laugh at it because I wasn't there.
Like, before I came here this morning, I pried 3 burp cloths out of his mouth.
Oh, God.
Okay, here we go.
Okay. So let's start with memory lane and then start going through Tom's questions, which I've done nothing to prepare for. This is just going to be based on me like looking around because we're in my kitchen slash diner, as Tom called it.
And this is going to be me looking around inside my mind.
Okay.
To remember my own kitchen because I haven't seen it in like an hour and a half or so.
And you miss it and you're missing it already.
Yep. Yep. So memory lane. So are we specifically doing like what's in your pantry or are we doing kitchens of yore?
I think just kind of kitchens of yore.
Okay. So, you know, honestly, what comes to mind for me is my first apartment, all of my own, here in Seattle. And it was at 67th and Roosevelt, just north of the University District here in Seattle. And it was a one bedroom, and it basically had like two rooms because the kitchen was separated
Did I ever visit you at this apartment?
No, I moved out of that apartment in 2006.
I know who lived up over there?
I don't know, but we've got to get to the
listeners. If you lived there and I came to your house, let me know.
The kitchen was separated from the living room by, you know, just like a counter top type thing. But it was my first kitchen that was really all my own. And I did so much cooking and baking in it. But what I remember most fondly about it is that it had, I mean, this could have been a real source of annoyance, but it was shaped like a square U. Sort of, right?
Yeah.
And in the two corners, there were those corner cabinets.
Sure, okay? Yeah.
But those corner cabinets didn't have anything to make them useful. Like, you know how sometimes they have like a funky, like Lazy Susan type thing in there? No. These just had like a shelf. And so the shelf like went around the corner.
Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, the shelf was adjustable in height, so you could take it out. And I remember when my mom was helping me move into the apartment, we both got sort of like the silly idea to put me in the cabinet. Because we could take the shelf.
That is not what you were going to say at all.
Well, the cabinet was so big and so pointless, and you could take the shelf out.
Right, I know exactly what you mean, that like you can't use most of the space because you wouldn't be able to get to the stuff.
Yeah, no, you literally would have to like put your head in the cabinet and reach your arm like all the way around.
Right.
All this to say, I have fond memories of laughing with my mom as I crawled into the cabinet and she closed the door and we both had a good giggle about it.
That's adorable.
But yeah, I also cooked so much in that kitchen.
How old were you?
I was 23.
Nice.
Yeah, I feel like people, you know, I'll talk more about this as we actually, I think both you and I might feel the same way, which is that the kinds of kitchens that people expect that we have in terms of amenities and space is absolutely not what we have. And I don't think it's a priority for me.
Like, oh, no, me neither. Yeah, like, this is fun. We should talk about this.
Yeah. So anyway, go on.
We should do an episode about
this.
Okay, great. So I mainly remember the kitchen on Southwest 46th Avenue in Portland where I lived from age like 11 to 18. It had an over-the-stove microwave that I remember that my mom got at a yard sale for $20.
Yes.
And I remember it like sitting on, I know I've talked about this on the show before, like kind of sitting on the table or like in the basement or I would like, you know, a cord sticking out of it that had been like chopped off and had like some bare wires hanging out, waiting for like our handy friend Mark to come over and help install it.
God, I love this.
And then, you know, he did a great job and like that was our microwave for like the whole time and worked great.
My microwave now, actually every microwave I have ever had has been a secondhand microwave. Mm-hmm. I had one in college that my dad bought for $2.99. It was called the Half Pint.
Sure.
And my microwave now, Brandon bought at Goodwill somewhere, and it's supposed to have one of the like little turntable plates. It doesn't. So we put our food on just like the base of that the plates
yeah,
was
yeah.
to go on.
I know what you mean.
Anyway,
so
whatever.
It's got some like weird.
It's got a little wobble.
Dents.
Yep.
Yeah. The kitchen also had a door out onto the patio where the gas grill was, where I would like go and grill myself a snack cheeseburger when I was a hungry teenager.
That's perfect.
Yeah, it was. And one time I broke the window because I didn't have my keys and I got home and I wanted to get inside. So I broke the kitchen window and reached around and opened the door. It was one of my finer moments. I burgled my own house.
Matthew, wait a minute. What, did you have like a sudden surge in testosterone? Did you turn into the Hulk? Or
I mean, I was probably like 16. So yeah.
How did you break the window? Did you like cover your fist like with your sweatshirt and punch it?
I think I probably used a rock. I think there was probably like a rock in the yard or
something.
You
broke the window.
Yeah.
Judy Amster, you long-suffering woman.
No, she thought it was cute. It didn't bother her at all. Just kidding.
Okay. All right.
All right. So let's dig into Tom's excellent questions.
Mm-hmm. Question number one, what do your kitchens look like? I mean, I'm going to try to keep this brief because, as everyone knows, when I try to describe something, it begins to look like an animatronic spider or something like that. Like,
you know what you should do is look for the telling detail.
Oh, you don't say. So basically, my kitchen is largely straight from the year my house was born.
Yeah, when it came, like, when it came out of its mommy house.
Yeah, 1958. The sink sprung a leak in like 2015, and a friend came over and helped us tear out the sink.
Handy friend, and
replace it. So we've got some like exposed, like unpainted, unfinished drywall and stuff. Anyway, all this to say, my kitchen is an amalgam of like naughty pine cabinets.
Naughty pine cabinets.
Yeah. Yellow formica, naughty pine drawers and cabinets, and then in like industrial, like restaurant sink, a single compartment sink, and then two lengths of like restaurant prep table. So we have a fair amount of counter space, quite a lot of counter space. And I actually love working in my kitchen, but it is not at all what people expect because my stove is an electric stove, as is Matthew's. My stove is the original like hot point electric stove, I think probably from like 1962. Two of the burners work properly. One of them doesn't work on high. And all the other ones, like it's like just a little cooler than the other burners.
I need to replace a burner. I'm having that problem with one of my burners,
and
too.
And one of my burners has lost one of the prongs that makes it hold flat.
Of course.
So I have like a 2.5 burner stove, and it sits on top of one of the prep tables.
It does?
You don't remember this?
No.
So when we pulled it out of the formica countertop it sat in when we were tearing out the sink...
Okay, yeah. No, it's because the oven is separate. Is that right?
The oven is separate.
Right, okay.
And the oven doesn't really fit in the... So we had a really small, like, hot point oven that matched the stove. They're both Harvest Gold. Or no.
Yeah.
No, excuse me. The color is copper tone.
Oh, okay. Does it have, like, a coconutty smell?
Anyway, but the oven was really small. And when the oven died and we were not able to get a heating element for it anymore... Brandon went out to like the ReStore or some salvage store in Seattle and bought a small oven to go there for like $200.
Okay.
Like a little like black GE oven. Mm-hmm. And that is what I have been using for years now. And I have to say, I mean, but just to finish the picture of what my stove is. So you can imagine how if you were to look at a electric stovetop that is made to be like embedded in a countertop, okay, it's got a whole bunch of like electrical stuff underneath it, right? Picture it.
I'm picturing, yeah, like the dark underbelly.
The dark underbelly. Well, so you can't just like rest it on a countertop.
Right, because you'd like put pressure on the underbelly.
Right. So our friend Michael, who helped us like tear out our sink. Our handy friend Michael. He basically built like a box that's like 7 or 8 inches tall. And the stove sits in the box. It's like and it sits on top of the counter. So our stove is quite tall. Like if you're doing something like making toffee or something where you have to stir for a long time.
Do you make a lot of toffee?
Every Christmas.
Yeah, okay.
We like go get the stool out, like the like little kid stool out of the bathroom and stand on it. The whole thing is so much jankier than people expect. And yet it all really like works for me.
Yeah.
It's totally fine. And one thing that I just want to add before we move on that my friend Joe pointed out recently while sitting and like just observing me like working in the kitchen while we were having a conversation is that everything in our kitchen is set up perfectly for someone who is right-handed.
Oh, interesting.
And I had never noticed this before. Joe is somebody who like really notices. He's
like, what's an example of that?
Well, so you know how when you are right-handed, you do a lot of things, you do a lot of kind of like basic things with your left hand so that you can do more dexterous tasks with your right
hand. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Like imagine holding like a toddler. If you're right-handed, you usually hold the toddler on your left hand.
You're right. Yeah, right? I do.
So imagine,
I've got one now.
So imagine you're cooking, right? It is so great for me, for instance, that my, well, like, for instance, when I am standing at the, like, the butcher block that's embedded in part of the Formica counter, that I reach to the right to get my knives, that all the drawers are to the right, the sink is to my left, the fridge is to my right. So I turn, I open the fridge with my right hand, reach in with my left. When I'm cooking and I take something off the stove, it feels very natural, like the direction I turn my body to go to the sink to drain it.
Yeah.
And I'm very aware of the one thing in the room that is not in the right place, which is the dishwasher.
Okay.
The dishwasher is, it's like in the wrong place for my arm. Like when I'm washing dishes, I want to turn to the left to put the dishes down in the dishwasher.
Oh, that's what I do.
Yeah. I have to turn to the right and it feels so wrong.
To reach into the silent partner.
That's right.
Quiet partner, which I know you don't even have that anymore.
That's right. Anyway, but all this to say, I'm like really not interested in spending the money, even if I had it, to redo the kitchen. I would much rather, I don't know, like have a bigger shower.
Yeah.
Or something. Like we have like
two shower spouts.
Oh, I don't really even care about that, but we have like a tiny like stall shower, you know, that's like basically in total the size of like an airplane bathroom.
Sure.
I mean, it's so small. And I could really go for a bigger shower.
Sure.
But I my kitchen is fine.
We'll save this for the what's in your bathroom.
like Brandon was over recently and he was saying something about like, have you looked into what it would cost you to bring gas into the house so that you could have like a nice gas stove? And I was like, well, that sounds awesome. But honestly, I think that there are so many other things I would rather put my money into than getting a gas stove.
I don't even think that's going to be legal soon.
Really? To bring?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
New gas installations? I don't think so.
Yeah, it's true. That makes a lot of sense. Anyway, okay.
Can I tell you about my kitchen?
God, please. I just rattled on forever.
No. I've got a picture in my mind now. Also, I've been there many times. Okay, so I have a small apartment kitchen. How many square feet would you say like the floor area of my kitchen is? 20?
Yeah, I would say that.
Yeah. And so like along one wall is the range and the refrigerator and my prep counter space, which is really like just the width of my cutting board.
Yeah, it is truly like 18 inches by 18 inches.
Yeah. And I have like, you know, probably like my most prized kitchen possession besides my knife is my IKEA cutting board that we got when we were like shopping for our first apartment in 1996.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, first of all, like we weren't sure whether we should like splurge and like we bought IKEA's most expensive cutting board, which was $20, the same price as my parents' yard sale microwave. And it's like, I don't know, 12 by 15 or like 10 by 15 maybe, and like 2 inches thick butcher block. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking at one point, like, you know, maybe at some point I'll move up to like a, you know, one of those fancy like booze block, like cutting boards. And I realized, no, like this one is going to easily outlast me. And there is no reason for me to ever replace it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so behind the cutting board, there are my two crocks of like spatulas and spoons and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Over on to the right of the stove, there is the toaster. It's a 2-slot toaster. And in front of the toaster are two mugs full of measuring spoons and silverware for cooking. I love having a mug full of just regular, like cheap silverware.
For tasting and
forking and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you turn around, then there's the sink. To the right of the sink is the cabinet that we call the root cellar that has like a little more space on top where we keep like tea and stuff.
And that's the root cellar is like a wooden cabinet that you have added. Like some people might call it like a small sideboard or something like that. And it was not originally part of the like built-in aspect of the kitchen.
And that gets like stuff that's stored in the cabinet, which is facing like away from the kitchen. It's like technically really outside of the kitchen, like tea and cocoa, crackers,
dry goods. Yeah.
To the left of the sink is the dishwasher. You cannot have the dishwasher and the fridge open at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
The microwave is on the counter to the left of the sink above the dishwasher. And at the end of the kitchen, if you're walking straight in, there's a grid on the wall that I mounted when we first moved in. It is crooked by several degrees. And it's got like some pots and what else is hanging from there?
Really
peeler.
Yeah.
rice washing
tongs,
sieve, tongs, that sort of thing.
A really valuable storage space.
Yes.
It's so interesting because it makes me realize, I feel like your kitchen, it's so clear. Well, I think both of our kitchens, it's so clear that we have like well-worn patterns. Patterns of movement through the kitchen. And I can't imagine, you know, there are so many schools of thought where like somebody will move into a new place and they will like redo the kitchen.
Sure.
Or whatever.
But you don't
they even
know
move
yet.
In. But you
right?
don't even know yet like how you're going to move through it.
Yeah. Like I know I'm going to move through it with an insane level of grace. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, like it would have never, like my dishwasher, similar to yours, you cannot, so when I have my dishwasher open, you cannot access any of the cabinets that have glasses or plates or any of the dry goods or Tupperware in the kitchen
sure.
when the dishwasher is open.
Yeah.
But really, truly, we only put the dishwasher there because that's where it was before. Like everything else that's in the kitchen has kind of evolved over the 12 years now that we've been in the house. And we've placed things where they are because it made sense for where we tended to work.
Yeah.
It's interesting you mention your cutting board. So I remember when Brandon and I got married, we registered for like a booze cutting board.
Yeah.
And I still have it and mm-hmm. I never use it
okay.
because it's really big and unwieldy.
All right.
And instead I have like a couple small cutting boards, you know, maybe like 8x12.
Yeah.
That are really great for pulling out to like, you know, cut a couple onions. But what I use mostly is the like super janky cutting board that came like embedded in the counter. And
yeah.
when Brandon and I moved in, we were kind of skeeved out by it because you could see like somebody's old crumbs like between the formica and this butcher block. And I remember he pulled it out when his dad was visiting and like sanded it down and we oiled it and stuff. And 12 years later, I cut everything except meats and like smelly yeah. things like garlic and onion on it. And I can't imagine why I would need to buy a cutting board again.
Yeah. Couple other things in my kitchen. First of all, the appliances are all whatever the cheapest thing your apartment manager gets at the apartment manager store.
Mm-hmm.
So like a GE, like bottom of the line range,
mm-hmm.
Like it's the cheapest dishwasher, the white refrigerator with no features. And they all are fine.
We had until maybe 3 or 4 years ago, we had the fridge that came with the house, which I think was from the 80s. And it was like a 2/3 size refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
It was really small.
Yeah.
And we replaced it when it died with a white box refrigerator.
Yep.
And I have to say, it's fine. Like, I don't need
I don't need like a water and ice dispenser that will definitely break immediately.
Yeah, I just don't. So it's really interesting noticing what matters to me and what doesn't.
Yeah. Outside my kitchen is an Ivar shelf unit from IKEA that has like salad bowls, spices, small appliances like the mixer and food processor, liquor, rice and other dry goods that didn't fit in the root cellar. And then on the bottom, baking pans.
And so that is all open shelving.
All open shelving. Yeah.
And that and kind of
a mess.
And that kind of extends into your like dining room
yes.
area.
Yeah.
yeah. And so would you say that your kitchen and your dining area are one room or do
they
you
are,
consider
they
them
are
separate
one.
Rooms?
Yeah. It's a kitchen diner.
Okay.
And there's like a little breakfast bar in between, like hanging off the back of the sink. But like you would never like sit and eat breakfast there because like the sink splashes onto
yeah.
there and it's very small.
Well, and the other thing is if you do that, then you lose the counter space where you currently have the microwave and stuff like that. So
yeah.
you lose valuable counter space. When we moved into the house, there was a wall that separated. There was like the kitchen, which was very small, maybe more like the size of yours.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was clearly like a breakfast nook with a light that clearly was designed to hang over like a round breakfast table.
Clear nook.
And then there was a wall and then a dining room. Brandon and I knocked out that wall. So now the house has a very like open floor plan, but we don't really have, I feel like our dining room is, it's all part of the kitchen, sort of.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. And I like that because I feel like, well, I don't think I really know anybody these days who doesn't have a place to eat in their kitchen.
Yeah, that's funny. Like when I think about one of our first apartments, like our first apartment in Seattle had a very unusual kitchen that was really like a hallway with some kitchen stuff in it. Mm-hmm. But then our second one, the kitchen was really a separate room from the dining room. And mm-hmm. it was kind of weird.
Maybe I can picture in a more like urban, older apartment building, more like a galley style kitchen. And certainly you wouldn't have a table in there probably.
Yeah, galley.
Streaming May 23rd only on BET Plus. Miss Pat is back.
I'm excited.
And it's time for some grown-ass family time.
I am a man.
Oh, you a man?
That's right.
Then take my clothes off. You ain't pay for none of that on your back.
Dad, you can't ignore your mother forever. I've tried.
Would you like me to backhand you again?
The Miss Pat Show. Streaming May 23rd on BET Plus. To sign up and learn more, visit BET.plus.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
So, Matthew, let's talk a little bit about the pantry aspect
of it. Let's do it.
Like, let's start with knives and pots and pans. You go first.
Okay. I have really just two knives that I use, like, every day. One is a, like, a 9-inch Japanese chef's knife, and the other is, like, a 4-inch Japanese chicken knife that I use as, like, a general small utility knife that's very chunky and fun to use.
Mm-hmm. I also have two. I have a 9-inch Japanese santoku.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would say it's a cross between this Japanese utility knife that I have that's maybe 7 inches and the little like German breakfast knife mm-hmm. that I know I mentioned on our.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, those are my big ones. And
I also have like a, you know, a carving knife with a really ornate handle and one of those like loops hanging off the end. But I use that mostly for stabbings like in old timey detective stories.
Yes. Okay. What about pots and pans?
Pots and pans. It's a real mix. I mean, I guess I would be kind of suspicious if I went into someone's kitchen and all their pots and pans matched, because I would assume that would mean they never cook. Right.
Or either that or they like really went hard on like the wedding registry.
I guess so. Yeah. Like recently married, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I got like, you know, a couple of all clads from back when I worked at Sur La Table and got a discount. Just some like, you know, a couple of random nonstick pans. And like, I don't know, like having like great pots and pans really isn't important to me.
I do like having heavy ones, but what that means is you know, really varies, because you can also get pretty heavy pots and pans that are designed for restaurants.
Right.
That, you know, you wouldn't find at like a Sur La Table or a Williams Sonoma or even at Target. So I have a mixture of pans that are designed for restaurants. I don't even know what the brands would be, but truly my MVP is, I don't even know if it's 2.5 or 3 quarts, but it is a copper pan that my dad bought. He bought like a set of them at an estate sale years ago. I mean, my dad has been gone for 20 years. So this pan, you know, has been around for some time. I think that there were 3 of them in all of different sizes. I have the largest one. My mom, I think, has the middle one, and then the smallest one was kind of useless. But anyway.
But where do you think it is now?
In heaven. anyway, I don't have a lid that matches it.
Mm-hmm.
I have just like a restaurant grade lid that's even like designed for like a 10-inch pan. And this is smaller in diameter than that. But it's really nice and heavy. I never polish the copper. It's beautifully heavy. It heats really evenly. I use it for cooking rice because I just don't tend to use a rice cooker. I use it for cooking rice. My spouse uses it for cooking ramen. I use it for heating up soups when I want it, when I have like enough for 2 people and I want it to heat up fast. Like, mm-hmm. I need a little more surface area than like a 1 quart.
Yeah, I get it.
Anyway, it is my number one, and it's a really nice pan. But again, like, it's something that like my dad bought at an estate sale, and it doesn't match anything else I have, and it has no lid, and I love it.
Yeah, I do think. Did you say it's like a 3-quart-ish size?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is certainly. I have two saucepans like that, and those are definitely my most used pans.
Yeah. And then I would say I always have to have one cast iron skillet.
Oh, yeah, I have three.
I have three as well, but I like a 9-inch.
I like a 10-inch.
Oh, sorry, that's what I mean, a 10-inch. Mm-hmm. Sorry. I like my 10-inch. And then,
yeah, you do.
And then I have a Le Creuset Dutch oven.
can I retract that?
Le Creuset Dutch oven, 5.5 quart.
Oh, I have a Le Creuset Dutch oven too.
That is absolutely.
Whatever you say now, I'm going to say I have that too.
That is absolutely perfect for all soups and stews. Mm-hmm. I've also done like roasted rhubarb and stuff like that in it. It's just perfect.
I made beef bourguignon in mine last week.
I love having these like mismatched pans that all have quite a bit of patina. It delights
yeah,
me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
How about what cooking stuff goes on the counter and what's in the cupboard?
Oh, this is important. Can I go first?
Please.
Okay, so next to my stove, I always have a little ceramic crock of diamond crystal kosher salt. Mm-hmm. That is always out and accessible at room temperature. There is always a jar of homemade vinaigrette behind the cutting board, and that always stays out as well.
Wow, okay.
Because it keeps indefinitely, and I definitely will not eat salad if I don't have vinaigrette that's made.
Interesting. Okay, I like that.
I just won't do it. Then other things that sit out are like there's always a jar of raisins because my spouse likes them. There's always a jar of raw almonds because mm-hmm. I like them. There's always a jar of jasmine rice. Always a jar of this hot chocolate mix that I started making because I learned about it on Smitten Kitchen.
Okay.
I think she calls it like decadent hot cocoa mix or something.
It's interesting to me that all this stuff is out. I realize this like how much stuff I don't have like out and have to like get out of somewhere.
Well, I have a lot more counter space than
that's
you do.
That's true.
I have a lot more counter space. One other thing that's always out is granola.
Mm-hmm.
And then a bowl of onions and garlic. Can I say what's tucked away?
Please.
But easily within reach is always...
I mean, if you're willing to reveal that to our listeners.
Okay.
What's tucked away?
Tucked away. So underneath the stove is a cabinet where I keep olive oil, vegetable oil, peanut oil, and all of my vinegars, as well as soy sauce. And I also keep cereal there mm-hmm. because the shelves in our cabinets are not the right height for a box of cereal.
Great. What's Gilbert's favorite cereal?
Oh, the other thing that is always out is a butter dish that I bought on the first trip you and I took to Tokyo together, Matthew.
Oh, did you get it at that one store?
That was all white
stuff. Kabobashi Dori with all white stuff?
Yeah.
I have my oven mitt that I, or not oven
yeah,
mitt, but
pot bear.
Holder with a little bear that says, I am a bear, why do you not go out with me?
Yeah, that butter dish always sits out and always has salted butter in it.
Awesome.
And then unsalted butter stays in the fridge.
Okay. Yeah, I can visualize all of this in your kitch.
Yeah.
I've got a pepper grinder and a little Crate and Barrel salt box with like a lid that you sort of flip. It's not flip, but like how would you describe my salt box?
It's like the lid like pivots like
it's, yeah.
on It's attached only at one point on the circular lid, and so you can kind of spin it
on
itself.
Honestly, it is not a good design. I don't know why we've used it for so long. The lid tends to fall off sometimes, and if you drop it, it definitely falls off, so it's not protecting against spills. So probably we should get a new salt container at some point, but it works fine.
It's useful to have a lid. I mean,
yeah.
I feel like I go through so much kosher salt,
yeah.
and it's in a place where if it didn't have a lid, it would get splattered on.
Right. Yeah. And mine also contains diamond crystal kosher salt. Like beyond salt and pepper, like there isn't a lot that's really like right within reach. There's
olive oil. Do you keep pepper right within reach?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't. I keep it on the table.
Yeah. There's olive oil and like a little squeeze bottle of vegetable oil above the stove, which I know is not the best place to keep those things, but I go through it so fast. It's fine.
Yeah.
I keep the big bottle of vegetable oil in the fridge. because one time I had a bottle of vegetable oil go like disgustingly rancid and I've been scared ever since.
Oh, that's a good point.
I don't recommend this.
Yeah, no. And I used to keep my peanut oil in the fridge and then
But it freezes.
I know it freezes. And plus I go through it pretty fast. Mm-hmm. I feel like I go through olive oil and peanut oil pretty darn fast.
Yeah.
And so I'm not worried about those. I mean, yeah, I'm just not worried about them.
Yeah, but for other stuff, like, you know, I do a lot of Asian cooking and I have a lot of sauces and condiments that live on the IKEA shelving unit. And so I'll like come around, get the stuff I need for this recipe, put it on the root cellar and use it and then put it back when I'm done cooking.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like stuff is like kind of mostly put away just because the kitchen doesn't have much space.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have an organization for your, I mean, do you have a method for how you organize your spices here on this shelf?
We did a spice organization episode, but I think there is no more method to my madness today than there was then, which is just that, like, it's kind of all out there.
Okay. And because you are the primary cook in your house, you probably remember roughly where things are.
Yeah. Although, like, you know, Watzel is the primary baker and uses like the baking spices pretty regularly. And like, I don't think she has a system really either. They're just kind of, you often have to like go through looking for like, which one was the cayenne? Where
mm-hmm.
was that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if that's the worst problem we have in our home,
God,
good for us.
Great. You know,
dingoes would probably be the worst problem we have, but the spice thing is number two.
I will say the other thing that is always out on my counter is a compost container.
Ours is under the sink.
Okay. Yeah. We keep ours on the counter. It's like next to the sink, which it's roughly between the sink and where I do all of my like chopping and things like that. And I do like having it out.
Yeah, like I need to like rethink my approach here because like when I was making beef bourguignon, which was actually yesterday, I took the compost thing out and just like put it on a cold burner on the stove, which I know is a dangerous game, and just had it out so I could toss stuff in it and not have to keep going under the sink. But I never do like a garbage bowl, and I don't know why.
I don't either.
But that's because you have yours on the counter.
Yeah. No, I mean, I will say that maybe part of the reason that I don't feel more irritation with the sort of janky, semi-functional appliances and kitchen situation that I have is that I have so much counter space.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is pretty great. It is very rare that I feel that I don't have the space to comfortably cook whatever I'm cooking.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't feel that way either, even though I have very little counter space. Like
yeah.
when I've cooked in a kitchen with more counter space, I find I tend to like make more of a mess and like go longer distances to get things.
Mm.
Not that I wouldn't
mm-hmm.
get used to it and figure out a system, but like when I find myself in that situation, I don't make good use of the space.
That makes sense.
Because I don't have practice and because I'm easily confused and disoriented. Even though I move with surprising grace and an erotic flair.
You do. You know, I have one question that listener Tom didn't pose, which is, so I've noticed that your sink, which is, you know, on this counter that mm-hmm. sort of juts out between the kitchen and your dining area.
Yeah, it's a jutter.
It roughly faces a window, basically, because mm-hmm. there's a window in your dining area. When you're washing dishes, are you the kind of person who likes to look out the window, or like what do you think about, or like what do you do when you're washing dishes?
I usually listen to a podcast.
Okay.
Do I look out the window? That's a good question. I mean, the window's like a little bit far away.
It is.
You know, it's like 8 feet from the sink, maybe, rather than like right in front of it,
mm-hmm.
and like that. So, like, you know, if something's going on outside, like a street fight or like a pack of wild dogs is tearing up and down the street, or like someone built a really big ugly snowman, then I'll look out the window, but mostly just for those three things.
Mm-hmm. In my previous apartment, not the apartment I described at the beginning of the show, but the one I had immediately before
that
this
one
house,
I do remember.
That one had a kitchen. It had a sink that faced a wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have to say that was a
rough.
Bummer.
Yeah.
That was a real bummer. My kitchen now, so I've got, you know, this restaurant stainless sink, and it's got this backsplash that partially blocks the window mm-hmm. behind it. But I think I do really appreciate having a window that I can sort of look out or just I feel like it makes dishwashing feel less onerous.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure.
Now staring into a wall, it's like having to like stare into your own soul.
It is.
And I don't know about your soul, but mine is gross. You don't want to look into there. It's crusty.
Anyway, yeah. So I should also say my kitchen is on the second floor of my house.
Oh, yeah.
Because my house, like, you enter on the second floor.
Right.
Basically.
It's literally the opposite of the dungeon.
It is. It's really weird now that I think about it. Yeah. I don't think about it often, but it is weird. I fully, like, all the living space of my house is really on the second floor. And so it's really, I feel like I'm in a little tree house sometimes when I'm washing the dishes because
aww.
There's a tree out there that's sort of like rangy and gnarly, but we've left it that
like
way.
Like my soul.
Because the birds like it.
Mm-hmm.
The birds like your soul too.
Yeah. They built a little birdhouse in my soul, well, like in the They Might Be Giants song.
Maybe. Anyway, okay, Matthew, do we have anything else to say?
No, I think that gives the burglars enough, don't you?
I think so too.
If you didn't consider yourself like hot to burgle before this episode,
wow.
Like, you should be ready to go now.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Matthew. Listen, I've got a now but wow.
I'd love to hear about it.
Back in November on my newsletter, I requested some podcast episode recommendations, like specific episodes.
Mm-hmm. Smart.
But.
Yeah, because imagine if someone recommended like listen to Spilled Milk and you looked at like 567 episodes.
Or like,
fuck this.
Or like listen to This American Life. Anyway, but that said, somebody, you know, there are so many, I would say increasingly there are like limited series podcasts,
yeah.
Right? You know, like Serial, of course, was the original.
What everyone wishes our show was.
That's right. Anyway.
Dire Desires.
So this was a recommendation, not for a single episode, but for a like limited series for a podcast called Death of an Artist. And it is an exploration of the death of this Cuban American, like was a real up and coming artist at the time of her death. Her name was Ana Mendieta. I bet a lot of our listeners have probably heard of her or heard of this podcast, but it really, many people believe and have reason to believe that her husband, who was also an artist, a more sort of established artist, Carl Andre, was involved in her death.
Mm-hmm.
So this podcast is basically a true crime podcast, but of course it has a lot more going on with it. I mean, it gets into a lot of questions about like, can we still, and I know that this is a topic I've mentioned other times in Now But Wows. But, you know, how do we deal with the art of people who are like malignant assholes,
mm-hmm.
or people who may or may not be murderers?
Right.
And also it's always interesting to think about like what happens to someone's art after they die. Like so often they sort of become like sainted, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, I find this podcast really compelling. To tell you the truth, I'm only about halfway through the episodes. But it both pushes the true crime button and the kind of like interesting philosophical question buttons. And it's really well done. So that's the Death of an Artist podcast. And you can find it wherever you find podcasts.
All right. Our producer is Abby Circatella. Please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to chat with other Spilled Milk listeners, you can do that at our Reddit.
That's everythingspilledmilk.reddit.com. And I bet people there have started a thread already, maybe about this episode where people are sharing like enough details about their kitchen to keep the burglars in business for years.
You know, I would also be really interested to hear about, you know, you seemed strangely intrigued by the thought that I always keep a jar of vinaigrette out on my counter.
Oh, yeah.
I'm interested in things that people feel are necessities, like necessity pantry or kitchen items, not so much gadgets, but like what do you always keep out that maybe other people don't and why?
And yeah, I want to know, like you can put this on the Reddit or contact at spilledmilkpodcast.com. Like, did you think that vinaigrette thing was kind of weird? Like, I mean, it's a good idea, but like it still feels weird to me.
I think I got the idea from my dad because he always made homemade vinaigrette and he always had it in like a little mason jar on the counter.
All right. Cool.
Ready to roll.
Yeah. He was a vinaigrette man, an endive man, an inventor of Altoids.
He was a roller of vinaigrette. He was ready to roll.
He was.
Well, I said you got to have the vinaigrette out ready to roll. So he was rolling.
He was a roller.
Hi. roller.
Until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk. I'm Mayor McCheese.
What?
Because you were talking about the Hamburglar.
Oh! Was that this episode? Oh, yeah,
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, I think it was.
I'm Ronald was McDonald. Okay.
You know, that's funny. Like, I don't think of Ronald McDonald as being a guy who was in the McDonald land universe, but of course he was.
Yeah. Okay.
Bye.
Streaming May 23rd, only on BET+. Miss Pat is back.
I'm excited.
And it's time for some grown-ass family time.
I am a man.
Oh, you a man?
That's right.
Then take my clothes off. You ain't pay for none of that on your back.
Dad, you can't ignore your mother forever. I've tried.
Would you like me to backhand you again?
The Miss Pat Show. Streaming May 23rd on BET+. To sign up and learn more, visit BET.plus.